All stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Good evening. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We're going to continue to talk about this week. What does it mean to be an American? I like to go back in history, and I like to see what our forefathers thought, what it meant to be an American to them. Because current day America, I think, has lost sight of what it means to be an American. You know, currently when you think of American pride, people like to point at sports. They like to point at football and the NBA, and you know, they like to look at certain athletes. They like to, you know, look at successful people that are in the United States right now. They like to look at politicians and decorated military figures. And even though some of those things may be accurate, some of those things may be honorable to look at, many of them are not, and many of them should not be the things that we look up to in this country, and many of them should not be the things that define us as a country. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, but when I think of what does it mean to be an American, and I think who are popular people that really excel at American exceptionalism, I don't think of Nancy Pelosi. I don't think of LeBron James. You know, I don't think of a lot of these different people out there. I see people who inspire me to be a better American. And I see a new frontier coming. The new frontier in America may end up reflecting a lot of the old frontier when we first began. Frederick Jackson Turner said that the significance of the frontier was that as pioneers moved into the frontier zone, they were changed by the encounter. For example, Turner argues that in the United States in 1893, unlimited free land in this zone was available, and thus offered the psychological sense of unlimited opportunity. This, in turn, had many consequences, such as optimism, future orientation, shedding the restraints of land scarcity and the wastage of natural resources. But also, when we talk about manifest destiny and the expansion westward after the 13 colonies, after Jamestown, you know, we start to look at Boonetown, and we look at some of the heroism that the frontier men and women went through. The just absolute horrific times that they went through with the Indian Wars, with fighting the British, you know, fighting each other. You know, we stop and we think, could I survive back in the frontier days without all the technological things that I use every day now? Would even someone on my skill level be able to walk back into the, you know, late 1700s, mid 1700s, all up until, say, the 1890s, which is when the Census Bureau said that the frontier stopped because there was really no longer any land, and Most of the land was already populated by settlements. Could we survive back then? They had no running water. You know, they had no flushable toilets. They had no cell phones. They couldn't take selfies. They didn't have politicians running their mouth 24/7 on Fox News and CNN. They didn't have baseball. They didn't have vehicles. These people were down to buckskins, tattered clothes, clothes that they made themselves from fur trapping, various different types of knives that the frontiersmen would carry on them, a musket, a long rifle. Some had pistols, not very many. And, you know, some had hatchets and axes. And all these people, especially, you know, we're going to focus on the frontiersmen. They really knew how to use their tools. And when you do a deep dive and you study about the American frontiersmen, you learn that when these people were on the fur trades, every tool that they had, it had a very specific use. Frontiersmen normally didn't carry just one knife. They would carry a jackknife, which would be a small pocket knife that had multiple different size blades on it for either skidding or whittling. Most of these people back then, especially on the fur trades, they would be making their own utensils, their own forks, their own spoons. Spoons was normally the most common thing. And, you know, the axes had a various role to play. Some did carry small tomahawk-like hatchets or tomahawks. But there's not really too many accurate representations of the frontier. And when you go through the history books and you go to these museums and you look at the types of tools and the technology that they had back then was just, you know, almost barbaric compared to now. You know, these people knew how to take a piece of iron that broke out in the middle of the woods, and they knew how to service it themselves and fix it. They knew how to put a new edge on a cracked blade. They knew how to make their own rope out of sinew. A lot of this was also something through trading that they learned through the Native Americans or the First Nations people, which I believe was probably one of the most significant things that helped the American frontiersmen survive in the frontier, in the wilderness. They learned many of the survival techniques, the abilities to find various forms of water, the different types of plants that they could forage on. You know, the Native Americans, through their process of trading and interacting with white settlers, really helped to create and shape and mold what I would call the American frontiersman. Many of the original frontiersmen were Scotch-Irish. They were settlers who were used by the government, and they would go out and they would be surveyors for land. So they would go out for miles and miles, hundreds of miles, and explore land and survey, and they would help with creation of maps, finding water routes, finding new trade routes, or, you know, just new avenues approach from one city to another, the Scouts of America. And if you were in the Boy Scouts, I'm sure you probably learned a little bit of this, but I was never in the Boy Scouts, but I know the Boy Scouts do, you know, teach a little bit about this, but there's a new breed of American frontiersmen out there who are still keeping the bushcraft skills alive. Dave Canterbury is one of them. I've spoken about him prior. Tom Brown Jr. is another one that I like to follow a lot. I have one of his books. Let me see. Here I am with dead air, and I'm looking for a book behind me. Tom Brown Jr., The Science and Art of Tracking, Nature's Path to the Spiritual Discovery. It's a great book, very insightful. Talks about Tom Brown Jr. and how he began to learn how to track and to hunt at the age of 8. And, you know, he's a renowned survival school instructor. And I think going back and rediscovering what the American frontiersmen accomplished, and trying to recreate that yourself, not only is that a good test of your skills, but it's a good test to compare yourselves to men from, you know, 200 to 300 years ago, and just to see how far advanced we are. But honestly, when you start to think about it, you know, just how much we have lost. And you have to think about it that if the power went out, I know I talk about this so much, but let's just say if the power went out, do you know how to make a fire? Do you know how to skin an animal? Do you know how to smoke and preserve the meat? Can you make your own bow and arrow and accurately shoot it? Do you know blacksmithing? Do you know how to safely forage through the woods and find edible plants? You know, these are skills that have been passed down for hundreds of years, and you know, especially within the Native American community, the First Nations people, you know, thousands of years of practical application in the wilderness, and they survived with what we would consider to be the most barbaric of a society now. Because, I mean, if you take people out of the ability to have their internet and, you know, a flushing toilet and lights that come on, people are going to think you're in the Dark Ages. But we had entire generations of people that thrived and survived. And it was brutal back then. You know, we're talking about a lot of hand-to-hand fighting, wars, multiple wars that were fought in this country against various empires, to include France. You know, just do some research about the French and Indian Wars. Man, the carnage that used to happen in the wilderness, the ambushes, the different types of military-style ambushes that would happen that also helped change the way our military looked at things. You know, if you look at the way the colonies were originally created, and us still using the tactics of the British, where people just lined up, and whoever was in charge of the platoon leader would, you know, give the instruction to the rest of the squad or platoon, hey, you know, muskets down range and fire. And then the next volley, fire. And then they would reload. But what made them so good was they were so disciplined at being still and reloading under pressure and while under fire. That really helped the British Empire to take over a large portion of the world when it came to the battlefields. But when you started to apply that within the American wilderness, those tactics changed. They didn't apply very well because the hit-and-run style ambush attacks, the guerrilla style tactics that the American colonies used, which were also something learned from the American Indians. It really helped us establish ourselves as a lethal fighting force. And, you know, many of those practices are still around today. Many of those practices are still talked about today. Just like the Rangers, the U.S. Army Rangers. I forget the name of the man that led them, but, you know, his nickname was a Swamp Fox. And he was renowned for his hit and run. And we look at these types of events from history and we have to compare ourselves, because they did something right that we're doing wrong. And I don't blame it on the average day-by-day American, because we conquered the West. From the East Coast to the West Coast, we conquered it. And because of that, it left very little to conquer except for ourselves, industries, and technology. Now, one of the things that I think gets in the way of being a good American is our self-indulgence in technology and our cutthroat business-like attitude within all of our various industries. And we're more than willing to cut each other down. We're more than willing to, you know, make whoever's going on the promotion board with you look like an idiot so that you get that promotion. You know, that's human nature. But there's a dulled edge on Americans that very few of us know how to properly hone and resharpen. I hope that with these discussions, I can give you the want and the need, that urge to go back into the wilderness and to rediscover a part of yourself that has been forgotten for many generations. You know, they say that we conquered the West. They say that we conquered the wilderness. Go into the wilderness and tell me how confident you feel. You'll probably end up going to Amazon and spending $3,000 on camping gear and not know how to get a proper fire going whenever the rain is coming down. These are skills that Americans need to learn. We need to learn to harness, and we need to be able to use them when we are needed. And at our beck and call of survival, you need to have these skills. Now, that can be transferred to any type of invasion, a grid down scenario, some sort of severe survival scenario. Let's just say you went out camping. A flash flood happened because you didn't properly plan throughout the week and check out what the weather was going to be. And, you know, because you decided to backpack in or hike in, you know, let's say 15, 20 miles into the wilderness, good on you. But you weren't properly prepared. You didn't know all the skills, and you just said, you know what, I'm just going to make this work. And you got all your gadgets. Well, when you run out of batteries and the solar panel doesn't get the proper amount of juice because it's been clouded coverage, and these technologies are not there for you, what do you have to fall back on? I've given you, you know, various different forms of how to make fire, a shelter, the various different types of simple tools and implements you should be carrying, and the proper clothing, you know, some decent backpacks. But all those things, some of them are life-saving, but the will and the want, that's what saves your life. And the American frontiersman from the 1800s to the 1700s, even the 1600s, these people had nothing but the will to survive and to push further into the wilderness for more freedom. Our freedoms have really been limited because we choose to stay within the concrete jungles of the cities and suburbs. We don't try to go out into the wilderness anymore and you know, cut down your trees and make your log cabin and set out a fur trap line and work your line and then start to barter and trade and grow, you know, a vegetable garden or go fishing, or, you know, you're harnessing the animals from the land for your food source. We don't think that way anymore. Not many of us. Not even me. I live very comfortably. And, you know, thanks to technology, we can. Thanks to technology, we have been able to live a much safer, more controlled life. But what happens when it's all taken away? And don't say this can't happen to you. Just do your research and look up all the different times people said that it could never happen to them, and they got stuck in the wilderness. And it wasn't mainly because of luck, but also because we have very, very good, well-trained search and rescue teams in this country. Many of these people perished. Very few survived. Missing 411, the author of those books, he has some amazing documentation of just how many people have been who went missing in national forests and state forests around the country. It is a bizarre phenomenon that revolves around some paranormal stuff. And it's interesting when you see how these people get so lost in the woods, they don't know, you know, they either don't have a compass or they don't know how to use terrain to navigate. You know, they forget where their car is and they just get lost and they keep walking, and then the snowstorm happens or they run out of gas. You know, there are so many stories out there. And there are so many different applications to learning how to survive in the wilderness. Now, I'm not saying you have to be a Grizzly Adams. What I'm saying is you should know how to take care of yourself. And one of the best representations of self-independence, self-reliance, were the American frontiersmen. We're going to continue to talk about this. We're going to go to a quick break, and we're going to pick back up on the American frontier.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power, massive debt, massive inflation, have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
Welcome back. This is American Vindicta. Consider this your history lesson. We are talking about the expansion west and the American frontier. Now, I don't consider myself a history teacher, but I do enjoy my history, and I do try to keep myself relevant to history so that I can ground myself. When I think of the frontier, I don't consider it to be going to Mars, even though they say that is the new frontier, leaving Earth and going to other planets. Best wishes to all of you who want to go to the red planet with Elon Musk. I'm completely for you going, and I wish you much success, but you're probably not going to have it. Not until we have the technology to terraform. I think that the Great Space Race was probably the last American frontier that we had, and unfortunately, it looks like the next frontier really isn't so much as leaving this planet as it is artificial intelligence. Now, that's a whole new subject that I don't know too much about. I don't even want to venture down that, because when I start thinking about artificial intelligence, I go back into doomsday mode, and I think about Terminator and Skynet, and I just want to go and start cleaning my rifle and counting how much ammo I have in my magazines. So let's skip that, and let's take a trip back in time. In the earliest days of the European settlements of the Atlantic coast, the frontier was any part of the forested interior of the continent, which was beyond the fringe of existing settlements along the coast and the great rivers. You know, you have the Delaware, the Susquehanna River, Connecticut, the Hudson, the Mississippi River, and all those different watersheds. You had different various types of settlers back then. We had English, we had the French, which we've already mentioned. You also had the Spanish and Dutch. And these different groups had various different forms of patterns of expansion and settlement. And they were all a little bit different. Only a couple thousand French migrated to Canada. And the French that lived in Canada along the St. Lawrence River, they had small communities that were relatively stable for long periods of time. And unlike the English and the Americans, they weren't trying to leapfrog west and continue to aggressively expand. They really more or less tried to settle down and eventually start building colonies. But the French fur traders, they were mainly around, you know, like, let's say, the Great Lakes, the Mississippi River, all the way up into the Rocky Mountains. And they normally didn't settle down for very long. They were mainly going along trapping lines. And, you know, if you really want to do your research, man, the stories that you get from the trappers and just the inventions that they created, the little things, the little knickknacks, the little things that made life a little bit easier. When you think about it, it's truly inspiring how these men out in the woods, you know, their gear would get destroyed, and then they would take and process animals and recreate and replicate this gear out of sticks and sinew and tar for as glue for their lashings. It truly is impressive when you think about just how their ability for their own self-reliance was. It was on par. There was nobody out there doing what the fur traders were able to do. The French settlement and a lot of those areas were limited to very small villages, around the lower Mississippi and Illinois countrysides. But the Dutch set up fur trading posts around the Hudson River Valley, and followed by large grants to a land of patroons who brought in tenant farmers that created a compact and permanent villages, and they really didn't push westward. And they also had, their skirmishes with the Native Americans within that area and with other settlers. But the English colonies, they generally pursued a more systematic policy of widespread settlement for cultivation and exploitation of the land, which required the extension of European property rights to the new continent. The typical English settlements were quite compact and small, under 3 square kilometers, which is 1 mile, 1 square mile. And they had quite a bit of conflict with the Native Americans over a bunch of political issues. And typically it was who would rule the land. And the way the Native Americans thought of it was, you were encroaching on our land, and, this 100 square stretch of miles or 1,000 miles from that river to this mountainside is ours. And the new frontiersmen like Daniel Boone would say, look, we're just trying to escape the city. We're trying to expand ourselves a little bit farther out, and we're just hunting whitetail buck, and, that's how we're making a living with a fur trade. And they would even try trading with the Native American tribes, but, there's a bit of a language gap there, and the Native American tribes were, some of them, not all of them, some of them were quite hostile, because they saw that these new people that were coming in, the white settlers, were stealing their land from them. And even today, we have quite a bit of political squabbles about Native Americans who, and you got to admit it, Andrew Jackson, he had a axe to grind. President Andrew Jackson had an axe to grind when it came to the Native American policy. And that's where we get things like the Trail of Tears and all those things that came from that, from him. And the Manifest Destiny, the push westward, it ostracized a lot of Native American tribes, and it displaced thousands of people, and very, very brutal death marches were part of it. And, we do talk about that periodically within the history classes of, the United States within, intermediate to high school level. I don't know how much is still talked about it in the colleges. It's been quite a long time since I've been in college. But I still feel that even as an adult, you need to go back in history and you need to, do some research. There's new evidence out there. There are people with more of these traditional stories that are coming out that really help you to expound upon what life was really like. And be some of it bad, be some of it good. History is not fair. History is never fair. It wasn't meant to be fair. You should really fear people who want to change and rewrite history to make everybody seem more culturally appropriate, to make everybody seem, like if we can all get along with each other. That's just not normal society within the human nature, period. I would do my best to love my neighbor as I love myself, but if you're trying to come and, chase me off my land, I'm probably going to stand and fight. And most people, I think, would be that way. And that comes from the Native American tribes to the settlers pushing out westward. And there was a lot of conflict, quite a bit of conflict that came from that. And it's things that we need to study, we need to get back to, I think. It's okay not to know what Kim Kardashian is doing this week and learn about the Ohio Valley. Learn about the Mississippi River. Learn about the expansion westward. History's cool, man. I love history. Most of the frontier movement was east to west, but there were other directions as well. The frontier in New England They went northward in Nevada, obviously eastward. And in Florida, they went to the south. And throughout American history, the expansion of settlement was largely from east to the west. And thus, the frontier is identified with the West. And America built its culture and the icon of America, which was the cowboy, the frontiersman. And I think we accurately did that. I think we've gotten away from that. We've gotten away from that harshness that we had as Americans. And I don't mean being harsh to each other, but the ability to endure harsh living. You know, if you look at the men who hunted buffaloes professionally, almost to the point of extinction, unfortunately, but the type of work that these guys did with just their hands, I mean, thousands of capes that they would have to do on these buffalo, skinning the buffalo for their capes, and just, you know, bringing them in and selling them, and in between killing the animal, skinning the animal, and eventually selling the hide of the animal. Some of these guys were ambushed multiple times, and they did this every single waking day just to be able to be successful for very, very, very little money. You know, money now is not like money then. You know, when, you know, a dime would be able to get you a steak dinner back in the 1700s, you know, that's not what we're going to do now. Heck, I remember my dad, and my dad's in his early 80s. He was telling me, you know, back in the 40s, you know, a quarter, maybe a couple dimes here and there. You go to the movies, fill your car up, get you some bubble gum, and get you a cheeseburger. Try and do that with less than a dollar. So my overall thesis here in what I'm really trying to get at is that we need to get back into history before we completely lose the identity of America. I think the original American identity is truly being threatened by the New World. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with having new technologies helping man to survive. But when those new technologies start to shape and mold man into something different, into something that God did not intend for you to be, we need to take a step back. I think, you know, this amazing computer that monitors me and spies on me 24/7 in my pocket called a smartphone. It's a cool gadget. I can't believe the things I can do with this thing. When I was growing up, you know, we still had bag phones, and truck phones were the new coolest and latest thing. You know, and then they came out with the Nokias, and eventually the flip phone. Man, you were cool if you had a Razer flip phone. All this technology is great, but we're losing our identity. We're losing what it meant to have dangerous freedoms. We're losing the rugged individualism. You know, men back then were manly, manly men. Everything they did was with their hands. They had to learn how to create different sorts, types of mechanical devices in order to help fell trees and to move large 1,000-pound trees. All this with just, you know, a saw, an axe, rope, and horses, or a team of mules. You know, get an 18-year-old out into the forest, just your backyard. Hand him an axe and say, fell that tree. And then say, okay, now move that tree from here to the front yard. Not only will you probably not be able to catch their attention because their head's going to be in their phone, but they won't want to do it. You know, we've become lazy and lax because of this technology. But when it's all taken away from us, whatever cataclysmic event it could be, if it gets taken away from us, do we still have the Constitution within us to be a frontiersman? Do we still have the tenacity to get dirty on our hands, to get dirty again, you know, to go out and sweat and bleed for your freedom? It's going to be hard to do that with a warm latte in your hand. And gents, I'm going to pick on you a little bit. and I can throw my name in the hat. We are getting comfortable. And when a nation like ours begins to get comfortable, and we indulge ourselves in the bread and circus more than we do hard work, we don't stand a chance against any outside invasion, period. I think we are coming to a pinnacle point in America that we are going to have to decide what is the future of America. Our politicians have already decided it for us. The technocratic elite have already decided it for us. We're to be subservient serfs. You're going to go home if you're allowed to leave your home. You know, you'll walk on a treadmill to generate the power that you'll need for the amount of power that you generate every day that the government says you have to have. You know, you'll work online. I can't see myself. And, you know, if you do this, I'm not picking on you. I'm just, from my background, it is alien to me, especially as Americans. It's alien to me to think that we would eventually be this way. But I think the end goal is to eventually have it to where man and woman almost never leaves their home. Your food's delivered to you, you know, in little bitty cubes of nutrients and gruel. You work online, or, you know, it may even get to where, you know, this is your 100 socks that you need to sew this week for the state. Because if the communists take over, that's what you're going to be doing. You're going to be making bricks out of your home. But if we advance to the point that we're so technological that we forget how to swing the axe, you know, how to use the rifle, we don't even know how to track anymore. These are things that, you know, in the 1800s, they were just a part of everyday life. You know, obviously because of modernity, it's not now. But, you know, what are we eventually going to evolve America into? Are we eventually just going to be a bunch of, you know, I don't want to get myself too in trouble, but are we eventually just going to be a bunch of big fat asses sitting in a chair with fingers coming out of it, typing all day? That's not America. That's not what we should be. That's not what we should strive for. I do say that, and I apologize for swearing. I do say that we need to advance in technology, but we need to get back to the wilderness. There's nothing wrong with getting back to the wilderness and going camping, you know, going for hikes, sweating a little bit, bleeding a little bit. There's nothing wrong with it. Rub some dirt in it, you'll be all right. You know, go out there and twist your ankle every now and then on a stump that you didn't see because it's dark and you're trying to go use a latrine at night. And if you've ever been camping, you know that your latrine, or the place where you go and, you know, use the restroom at, should never be uphill of your campsite. It should always be downhill. It should always be about, you know, probably 100 meters away. But if you're in Big Bear country, don't be too far away. But how many of you even know that? How many of you even know basic wilderness survival skills? You know, even if you do live in a high-rise condo and you're listening to me right now, it doesn't hurt to know these skills. It doesn't hurt to know your history. What hurts us is not continuing to practice these skills and to learn how to adapt ourselves to the land. It does not hurt us to learn about history so we don't repeat it. But if you ever find yourself in that disaster-like scenario, it would help you greatly to learn a little bit of history, to remember how the American frontiersmen survived when they had little to nothing. And we have the ability now to buy survival food and survival flashlights and survival lanterns that are powered by solar panels. You know, your bug out location, your bug out bag. You know, they really took this and turned it into an enterprise, this whole survivalist movement. But survivalist movement was never about the gear. The men who were survivors created the gear. They didn't just, you know, fall out of the sky. The men and women who were the American frontiersmen, And, you know, it's not just the American frontiersmen. There's frontiersmen from all different walks of life around the planet, but I'm just specifically talking about the American. But we had, you know, tactics and techniques and procedures and training seminars based off these things from survivalists. And I think it's interesting how many people don't know these skills and are okay with it. You know, for me, it, like I said, it's alien for me to not think like that. I grew up on thousands of acres out in the woods of Southeast Texas. And, you know, I had the ability to get on my four-wheeler and to go for miles and miles whenever I wanted to. And I would go and track animals. I would go and find new water sources. I would follow the creek for as long as possible, sometimes on other people's property, not knowing what I'm doing. You know, I would go and discover old abandoned railroads and railroad crossings. And, you know, I used to go treasure hunting and find all different types of really neat stuff. Now parents are afraid to let their kids out. You know, I think we need to get back to a little bit of adventure. I think it's okay to take a vacation every now and then, not to Disney World. Go to Yellowstone. Man, you want to have a really interesting time. Go walk around in Yellowstone. I love how you can walk around in Yellowstone, the Yellowstone State Park, and at some of the restroom stops, it will say, "Don't pet the wolves." Now me, I go back into my old military mindset and I go, "What idiot pet the wolves?" It's people like that who, whenever you're released on liberty for the weekend, they're the ones who always get in trouble, and by Sunday night, everyone's pulled back in, and now you're having to have a safety stand-down week because this idiot got drunk and ran his car off the cliff, and they found him in the ocean. And those things do happen. But don't pet the wolves. My goodness. Once again, America, do you have to be told don't pet the wolves? Do you have to be told make a fire when you're cold? Do you have to be told wear the proper shoes, buy the proper clothes if you're going to go hiking into the wilderness? An Adidas tracksuit is not recommended. You know, people live, they learn, but not all of them do. Some learn and they don't live. I never want to be the one who is out in any type of disaster-like event where I get stuck in a snowstorm and I'm buried in. I don't have the proper means to dig myself out, or the skill to know how to keep my body warm, or the ability to, you know, signal people correctly if I'm lost in the woods. I always have a multi-tool on me. I like my Gerbers and my Leatherman. I always have a multi-tool on me. Always have some sort of a single-edged knife. I don't like serrated knives too much. I find them to be a little bit of a pain to keep sharp. And I always have something to sharpen my knives with on me. And to go off with that, I also have a Bic lighter. I never leave my house, not to go check the mail. I mean, maybe I'm an extremist at this, but I don't leave my house without very, very simple, small tools, to include my pistol, because my protection means a lot to me and my family, and I'm not protecting myself from the white-tailed deer. Man, I wish someone would tell Congress that. Anyhow, I find that survivalist preparation is a very simple, very easy thing to do. And, you know, you can have a good backpack. You can have, you know, a good breakdown of gear inside that backpack. A couple weeks ago with the shows, I explained a bunch of that. So please, you know, do your research and look up all the different things I talked about. But I would tell you to take that gear and to go practice with it. If you really want to practice and really hone in your skills, go to your backyard. Just go to your backyard. It's your safe space, hopefully, unless you live in Chicago, you know, or Detroit. Go to your backyard, practice on how to make a fire. Find something that you can cook, and you can go to the supermarket and buy some red meat and learn how to cook it over the fire. You know, a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper. Don't make anything too extreme. Learn to embrace the suck a little bit. And just sit back and think. Men back in the day, a couple hundred years ago, would trek for miles and miles a day, not only trying to find food, but that food was something that they had to skin, and then they had to turn into some sort of a pelt so that they can sell it for the fur trade. But they also had to keep a situational awareness for the highwaymen, the ambushers, for hostile Native American tribes, other hostile fur traders who would easily kill you just to take your fur. You know, bears, wolves, mountain lions, coyotes. There are all different types of natural things out there that are trying to kill them. You don't have to experience that, hopefully. You can just go to your backyard and just sit back and, you know, get a good history book and read a little bit over a campfire. Learn to live outside your house every now and then. It's good for you. It's good to get a little dirt under your fingernails. It's good, you know, even if you don't bathe adequately for one day, you know. Try sleeping on the ground in a tent and come back and tell me how it felt. Were you on level ground? Were you on an incline? Which way did you decide to face on the incline? Did you face downhill or uphill? You'll figure that one out really quick. Were you sleeping on top of rocks, on top of sticks? Did you try to make your own bedding out of the natural fallen material from the trees on the ground? You know, what was your weather like? All these different things will change your idea of, oh my gosh, I need this, and I should have worn these clothes, and at night, then I got too hot, so I had to take those clothes off, and then the bugs came at me, and then the dew is something many of you will experience, made everything wet and made it cold, and then all my shoes were cold, my socks were wet. It sucks a little bit, but it's a good thing to practice every now and then, because you just never know when you're going to find yourself in that really, really crappy situation that you weren't prepared for, you weren't planning, it just happened. But if you're mentally prepared to embrace the suck, if you have it within your heart, that testicular fortitude to push through it and to not become a victim, and if you have the head knowledge of how to survive, you won't be a victim. You'll be a survivor. And that's a unique story that I love to hear about. One of these days, here soon, I'm going to have a website up, and I'm going to have a bunch of different historical stuff put up there of survival incidents and the American frontier, and you know, the type of things that these men would go through, type of gear they used, some good books as references. And I think hopefully the people out there who listen to me, who like the type of rhetoric that I come up with, I hope you like it. If you haven't noticed so far with the way I do these shows, I plan out for a week what is a really good topic, and I try to have 5 days worth of expounding upon that topic. And, you know, I do my research on it, but a lot of it is also stuff that I've experienced in, and I try to give you a lot of my own opinions. And I have a pretty good amount of head knowledge for some of this stuff and a pretty good amount of experience. And there's always someone better. There's always someone with more experience. There's always someone with worse experience that we can always learn from. And there's nothing wrong with learning. My dad used to tell me, son, every day you should try and learn one new thing. So for this week, I would like for you to try and learn one new thing every day. And I'd like for you to learn something about, let's just say, very simple survival, wilderness survival skills, or bushcraft skills. I want you to be able to learn how to work with your hands while out in the wilderness. We're about to go to a break, and I'll see you right after.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing, and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
And we're back. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. So we've been talking about the American frontier, what it means to be an American, and what it meant to be an American to the frontiersman. I think independence, self-reliance, the freedom of being out in the wilderness without all the different entrapments of modern society, I think that is one of the greatest ideas that is out there for your own frontier. Learning how to go beyond what you are now and finding something new. Taking that dull edge and sharpening it and honing it. And honestly, when we talk about this, we're talking about the mind and the soul and the body. Your mind is your greatest weapon. Your soul is the fire that lights up the darkness. That is the light that God has put into you that gives you the inspiration through the Holy Spirit to get out and to be motivated, to challenge yourself, to, you know, the confidence to do things, and the comforter whenever things start to get scary. And the other thing is your body. Getting out into the wilderness, stretching the legs a little bit, breathing in the fresh air, looking at the different types of birds, you know, go fly fishing. I've always wanted to go fly fishing. You know, just go out and do some wildlife photography or wildlife sketching. I find that to be something that I used to be pretty interested in. I used to go out to scenic views and I used to try to sketch the scenic view. And I am no artist, but you know, it was fun. And I like to track animals. That's something I really, really enjoyed a lot, especially as a kid. I used to find the little tunnels that the animals would make through the woods. And I used to get cut up by briars and get ticks on me and, you know, spiders falling on me. And I hate spiders. You know, I love doing stuff like that because it's not me playing, you know, a video game and being tied to a TV. It's not me being on my phone and being tied down with the nonsense of social media. It's not me sitting in front of a TV and being brainwashed by all the garbage you see on TV now. To me, it's honing that edge, appreciating what it means to be American, appreciating what it means to be in a country that went through so much and prospered so much and the ability to, you know, just to try and replicate some of the past today, I don't know, to me, that's a freedom that I find helps me to release a lot of stress. It helps me to rezone my mind and to get back on track of who I want to be and not who society tells me to be. It's the reason why I don't fit in too well. Besides the fact that I don't fit into most places too well anyways, I'm a little bit of a bigger guy. But I do like the idea of being a little bit rugged, having that edge, having a little bit of that animalistic nature. I think it's good for you. I think it's something that helps define you personally. You know, I don't think going to Starbucks and getting the latest, you know, holiday season sugar cookie and the latest 3,000 calorie sugary drink is really what helps to define you. I think it helps to soften you up a little bit. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying these things here and there, but we get so used to it. We get so used to microwave meals. We get so used to TV and to our phones. And it's 7 o'clock, I got to get up and go to work. And 5 o'clock, I got to get home and so I can hurry up and watch my TV show that I've been watching for 5 years. It's okay, America, to get out into the woods. I want to leave you with something. I got three men that I want you to do some research on. These are some of the most famous American frontiersmen. Davy Crockett, a man who fought in the Alamo, ran for Congress. Daniel Boone, you know, he created Boonestown. He was a very prolific frontiersman back in the late 1700s. And then we have Kit Carson. Kit Carson was a bit of a wild card, a bit of an outlaw. He was illiterate, but he was probably the most prolific explorer, woodsman, and frontiersman that I think the United States ever used. And I do mean used. Kit Carson helped to lead expeditions westward with Fremont, who was also an explorer who was sent out there by Andrew Jackson, to find a trade route all the way to Oregon. They, you know, created the Oregon Trail, found the West Coast. These same men were also used during the Spanish-American War, and they actually helped to fight part of Mexico in California, and they led a rebellion and an uprising against the Mexican forces that were there, and helped to overthrow that and helped to conquer the West Coast more or less. And Kit Carson did all this, on foot. You know, he would go back and forth on foot. So that's your research for tonight. I hope you like today's episode. Thank you very much to anyone who hears this. Please share this show with people. And if you like the type of material that I'm putting out there, please support me. Spread the message. I love all of you. Be careful. Be safe this holiday. And we'll see you tomorrow. I'm Doug Thornton. This is American Vindicta. Out.